And we meet again. This time, on a misty evening, in what will one day be the Northeast Netherlands, near the border with Germany. Here, the forests of beech and oak open out into patches of marsh. As night draws in, and wisps of heavy fog creep along like stealthy ghosts, come close to the fire and take a drink of this cider. I did put a little something in it to keep back the late autumn chill. That was a barn owl. We're lucky to hear that, but it means something may have frightened it. The creatures most likely to cause us trouble don't make a sound as they approach. And if they speak, stop your ears. They will call you to follow. And no matter how strong you are, you will go to them, into the cold night, never to return. This region is to Bergen, where the Witte Wieven dance between the trees. In France, they are the Dame Blanche. In Germany, they are the Weiße Frauen. In English, they are the White Women. And they may be the spirits of seers and healers, or they may be land wights or elves, guarding the brooding graves of the wealthy and the wise. Some are said to be the ghosts of women wronged by men, set after death to visit revenge on unwary males who venture too far afield. Some harry drunkards or lure travelers to their deaths, much like the will-o'-the-wisp. Always they dance and seem to be made of mist. Always they fetch away the unwary to the dark fens and forests. Are they, perhaps, the personification of the dangerous marshlands that swallow livestock and travelers alike? Here in Tubergen, at least, they seem to be something more. The White Women of Tubergen appears in a collection of Dutch folklore from 1917 by Joseph Cohen. The version I found was translated to English by the poet and folklorist Eva Weglar. Here in Tubergen, I will retell the story in brief. There once was a young mother in Tubergen, with a tiny child and a loving husband who was a farmer in the region. One day while she was fetching water, all alone, she felt the touch of cold fingers at her back. Startled, she turned and saw a crowd of tall women around her. They were dressed in tattered white clothing, and their hair was white and wild. As they towered over her, she saw to her dismay that she could see right through them in places, where their dresses flapped and shifted even in the still evening. Their nails were long and sharp, and their eyes were hungry. The world grew dark around her, and the women glowed white and eager. "Come away with us," they whispered. "No," she said. "It would be a sin to leave my baby." The young mother screamed for help, but no one heard her. Go away," she pleaded. "Come with us, and you'll never want to return home." They closed in around her. "What about my child? What about my husband? I don't want to leave them." The white women said nothing, but began to move towards the dark line of trees. Despite herself, the woman could not resist. She followed, though her heart was breaking. All the town searched for her, but no one found so much as a footprint. The people of Tubergen are proud and stoic, slow to talk and slow to trust, but when one they love is in trouble, they will always offer help. They took it in turns to stay with the husband who lost his wife and to care for the child who lost their mother. They didn't say anything, but they never lost hope of finding their kinswoman. The child thrived under the care of the village, but the neighbors said it was as if a mother's touch were raising it. Soon they noticed little things, small acts of care, occurring when they knew none of them had entered the house or seen to the child. At last, someone mentioned it to the grieving husband. He sat up that night, hidden outside and listening to see if he could catch the mysterious caretaker. He waited all night, and no one came. He was about to give up when a soft voice came from inside his house, though no one had passed him. "Did you sleep well, my child? Come, let Mother wash the sleep from your eyes." The voice was that of his lost wife. He crept into the house and saw the child in their bed, reaching out and smiling at nothing. He spoke to his neighbors, and they all agreed to sit up with him and devise a plan. His wife obviously wanted to return to their child, and he missed her desperately. They all together took a cart to the forest at twilight and went to the hill where the white women were known to dance. They took guns with them and hitched their fastest cart horses, but didn't say a word as they approached the hill. And in the gathering night, the white women, tall and tattered, appeared on the hill with the small, dark form of the missing woman amidst them. The townsfolk fired volleys of shots toward the women, who fled, leaving their kinswoman in a little grove of heather. She reached out to her husband, calling for him in a desperate, sad voice, begging to be reunited with her child. He lifted her into the cart and held her tight as the band of rescuers urged the horses back down the hill. Soon the swirling mist congealed around them, and the furious white women tried to surround the cart. They threatened and pleaded for the woman to dance. And finally, unable to stop the plunge of the terrified horses and the loud shots, they dispersed, saying, "Later, you won't be able to come willingly, only when the words are spoken, for time goes on, and who can stop it?" They brought the terrified woman, cold as death, to her house. Outside, the voices of the white women mocked and called and sang. The woman sat bent in sorrow, even as her child was brought to her. She prayed to be released from the spell of the white women and began to cry. The next day, it was as though she barely remembered her home. Slowly, she went about as if trying to recall her own house. She barely spoke, and her husband asked if she wanted to return to the white women. "No, not if it were up to me. I know it was evil to leave you," but her eyes were still sad and frightened. "What then? What is it?" her husband asked gently. "There are words," she answered, "which can never be spoken." "What are the words?" "Should any other say, 'Away, you pig,' then I will be taken away again." "No one will say that," said her husband, and he made it known to everyone in the village never to say the words, "Away, you pig," lest his wife be taken again. Years passed, and the young mother's pain seemed to ease a little. At times, though, people would see her gazing fixedly into the forest, towards the hill where the white women danced. She did this a lot at twilight, and it greatly disturbed anyone who witnessed her expression. Her chores often went undone, her child unattended. A shadow still lingered over all she said and all she did. What no one saw was the nightly visit of the white women beneath her window. "You'll come to us soon." "I know, white women. Let it be soon." Time can heal, but it can also make us careless. And one day a lad was working grain near the woman's house. A large pig kept nosing in, trying to steal a snack. "Away, you pig," said the lad, aggravated, then clapped his hands over his mouth, realizing what he had just said and what it could mean. He ran to the husband, and by the look on the lad's face, the man knew. "You spoke the words." They ran together to the house, hoping to stop what was coming. The woman was gone. They searched and searched, but this time, they never were able to bring her home. They saw her dancing, though, golden bells in her ears and strings of pearls all about her. Her clothes had become tattered and were bleaching white from days and days spent dancing in the forest. Sometimes they see her weeping, racked with guilt, for she knows to run away and dance like this is a sin. Unlike the stories of ghostly white women appearing to trick and steal away lost travelers and drunkards, the white women of Tubergen work a more powerful magic. They lure a woman of good character, a mother and an attentive wife, away to a life of cold and brutal freedom in the forest. No comforts of home or family, perhaps, but these pale in comparison once the woman has danced, once she has committed this sin. These white women may, therefore, be the call of the wild itself, or perhaps the danger of a wild and independent mind, particularly if one happens to be a woman. In the culture of farming communities in Christian Europe, women were especially expected to adhere to social norms, to bear and raise children, and manage homes, and I have no doubt these women felt immense love for their families. But perhaps this tale is meant to play on that a little bit, to frighten the ambitious or independent woman into conformity, lest the people she loves be taken away forever. Interesting also that it is an unkind word, a careless word, that finally sends the woman away forever. Perhaps it is also a warning to communities about how easily people may be hurt and alienated. What do the Witteviven teach us today? When I read the story, I felt the sting of my first time leaving home. I knew I wouldn't be the same when I returned, and I also knew I wouldn't be able to resist the allure of the wide open world, so I felt I was doomed to miss my freedom when at home, and to miss my home when I was away. This is the double edge of longing and nostalgia that the Witteviven can represent. I think there is another layer here as well. Many of my friends are mothers of young children, as well as being hardworking and brilliant professionals in demanding careers. They often find themselves caught between guilt that they don't give enough to their children and guilt that they don't give enough to their careers. They feel trapped, often, and judged by traditional expectations that mothers should be primary caregivers of children by default. Sometimes this pressure comes from the things they internalized as children and young women, but sometimes it is being actively applied by family, or other acquaintances, or even complete strangers. It's aggravating and tiring, and gets under their skin precisely because they are loving mothers who do prioritize their children, but often fear that they aren't doing enough simply because they also love and prioritize other parts of their lives. Fortunately, most of these women have supportive partners and supportive families who also prioritize their family and take responsibility for rearing the children. But not all of them. The old story of the white women of Tubergen may once have admonished women against the sin of looking beyond her home for fulfillment, but we can also read it in the modern world as giving voice to the angst of women who find themselves feeling trapped between outdated but powerful gender roles and the human need to use their talents and expand their minds. If there are any women listening who feel this way, I'll give you another story from my life. I don't have children myself, but I am the child of a mother who returned to school to pursue her dream career when I was very young. Both my mother and my father dealt with ignorant comments from people who somehow felt this was wrong or risky. But the real pressure on my mom came from inside her. My mom is a brilliant educator whose mind absolutely devoured books and classes, and who eventually wrote a well-received master's thesis. While working towards this, she constantly worried that she was somehow neglecting me. Dad worked nights and was around to help early in the morning, but he had to sleep sometime, and Mom knew she could lose track of time as she worked. She apologized to me even as an adult for little times here and there where she felt she neglected me. And for the record, my mother never neglected me. So I told her, and I will tell you, that I don't remember any of her perceived shortcomings. What I remember is loving everything about watching her work, from the slap of her typewriter keys to the stacks of mysterious books she would let me look through and try to understand. We took visits to her college library that were, to me, like going to some strange magical land. And sometimes I even got to go to classes with her, and she had very kind professors who would let me try the assignments. Later, I would help her setting up her classroom, and while I was working on my PhD, I proudly watched her attain her National Board Teacher's certification. So as adults, we shared the stresses and the joys of growing as professional women. Her work didn't make her a bad mother, and it didn't make my childhood a bad childhood. Quite the opposite. Her work was a constant source of intrigue and excitement for me, even as a young child, and to say it contributed to my choice to pursue graduate work is a huge understatement. It made me crave intellectual stimulation and made me want to make a positive impact on the world. Please remember my story the next time you feel trapped as a parent and a professional. The old expectations of you are wrong. Your choice to pursue career and family can enrich your children's lives in ways you won't even know until much later. This has been a production of A Walk in the Dark for Ancient Voices, with music by Coag at co.ag on YouTube, licensed under Creative Commons. I'm your storyteller, Amanda Newsome.